It's the middle of December, 1142. Snow has fallen heavily over the last few days, layering the rooftops of Oxford in a thick blanket of pristine white. But in the streets below, the snow has been churned up into a slippery brown sludge by thousands of feet, hooves, and wheels, as King Stephen's army asserts its control over the city. For 3 months now, they have surrounded and harried Oxford Castle, only separated from its high walls by the river. Although the army is well supplied, the siege has been long, the winter is harsh, and conditions within the camp are uncomfortable. All of the men hope that the small garrison defending the castle will be forced to capitulate soon. Having retired to his lodgings, King Stephen wishes for the same. Beyond the river and behind the castle walls sits the principal rival for his throne, his cousin, the Empress Matilda. Stephen knows that this is a pivotal moment. After years of playing cat and mouse across England, he finally has Matilda cornered. She has been humiliated into a hasty retreat, separated from her most powerful commanders, and is now trapped in a city under his control. Soon, the greatest threat to his crown will be removed.
On the opposite side of the river, beneath the light of the full moon, Matilda is all too aware of the peril of her situation. Supplies within the castle have been exhausted. Those who have followed her here have served her well, but they too have been drained by a lengthy and arduous defence. With little prospect of relief reaching them soon enough, and with Stephen's army practically knocking on the castle gates, Matilda has reached a critical decision. She approaches the riverbank with three of her most trusted knights by her side, keeping to the shadows of the castle walls. Dressed warmly for travel, each of them also carries a linen bedsheet bundled tightly under one arm. The night is bitter, and Matilda can see the mist of her breath rise shakily before her face. After 3 tedious months, the time for action has come at last. Winter has gripped the land so fiercely that even the fast-flowing River Isis has frozen. In the moonlight, it appears as a dull, solid silver, a treacherous bridge promising freedom to those bold enough to cross. This may be the only opportunity to escape. For a moment, Matilda shuts her eyes and prays, beseeching the Almighty to keep her from harm. With a nod to her companions, all four unfurl the sheets they have brought and cloak themselves in white, blending with the snow and ice around them. Leaving the shadows, they move as swiftly and as silently as they can towards the river. The first knight to reach the edge of the bank pauses to gather himself before gently stepping down onto the ice. Once satisfied that it will hold his weight, he takes a few cautious steps before turning back to signal that it is safe for the others to follow. As quickly as they dare, they make their way across the frozen river. Matilda keeps her eyes on the far bank up ahead and tries not to think of the icy water flowing barely a hand's breadth beneath her feet. More than once, she slips and loses her balance, but a knight is close by to keep her from falling. After what feels like a lifetime, the party scramble, thankful and breathless, back onto more solid ground. With barely a backward glance at the castle, they throw off the white sheets and hasten away. Clouds veil the moon and plunge the bank into darkness as Matilda, Lady of the English and would-be queen, slips away unseen through the enemy lines and out of Stephen's grasp. Anarchy will reign in England a little longer.
Hello there, listener, and welcome back to another episode of the Cloak and Dagger podcast, a podcast where we tell chaotic stories from across history. Today is an incredibly special episode because not only am I joined by my co-host Patrick Courtney. Hey, Patrick.
Hello.
But we are also delighted to have our good friend Jess, a talented historian, to bring a story for us today. Hey, Jess, how you doing?
Hey, thank you guys so much for having me.
You're welcome. We've had quite a funny time trying to get everything set up. And we're also very excited because this is one of our first episodes where we're using all of our new hardware, including guest mics, which actually took quite a long time to set up, didn't it?
Yeah. It's very complicated. Everything seemed to shut down immediately as soon as we did it, but it's now running, hopefully. I mean, if you, listener, are listening to this, it worked. If you're not, then it doesn't matter.
Exactly. That's the right way to look at it. But yeah, welcome to the podcast, Jess. We're really excited to hear the story you've brought to the table. From you guys have probably heard, you would have heard the walkthrough. I know a little bit of the tale and Patrick knows absolutely none of it.
I know nothing about, I don't even know much about this part of history, really. No. So it's really exciting for me. I've heard, like, I know bits about Empress Matilda and, you know, kind of a bit about it. But I think my main knowledge of this, which we might talk about a bit later, is that this is the inspiration for the current Game of Thrones or House of the Dragon series, because mm-hmm. it's the anarchy and it's this whole world of brother against sister kind of spiel.
Yeah, it's the whole cousins element to it, and it crops up in so much popular media, like Ken Follett's Pillars of the Earth. Did you ever see or read any
of
that?
Yeah, I read Pillars of the Earth, yeah. So it comes from that.
I didn't know, more basic.
I'm just Game of Thrones is definitely easier to watch.
Game of Thrones, yeah.
Definitely easier to watch, yeah.
Well, brilliant. As always, dear listener, please come onto our socials at Cloak and Dagger Podcast on Instagram, where you'll find, you know this by now, there's sneak peeks, there's episode posts, and also a final fact to end the week. So yeah, check that out on Instagram, and please go ahead and tell a friend, because honestly, this podcast grows by you telling a couple of friends. We don't pay for any of our advertising. It's all just done mainly by word of mouth.
We didn't figure out how to do that. That's why we don't pay for advertising.
Actually, full disclosure, it's because Instagram thinks that we owe them money, so we can't actually boost any of our posts.
Is that why?
Yeah, I've tried so many times to get rid of that bill, but we never paid. It wasn't that we haven't paid it. It's a glitch.
Yeah, so Instagram, anyway. If you're listening, so Meta, if you're listening, we've tried, but you're not making it easy.
You are the only reason why this grows. So yeah, go tell a friend. That would be amazing. But yeah, without further ado, welcome to the podcast, Jess. And should we get started?
Thank you. Yes, let's get started. I'm really looking forward to seeing Patrick's face as we go through some of these.
Because I'm excited to make that face.
It's just going to be awesome. So we are focusing on the anarchy, which, for those of you who aren't familiar with it, was probably one of the more chaotic periods of the medieval period.
Which is saying a lot, isn't it? Because the medieval period, pretty chaotic in general.
Yeah, they weren't a happy bunch. They weren't a happy bunch. Nothing was straightforward. All I'm going to say is 1066 and the events in that casts a really long shadow.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
And nothing is happy after that. So it's the story of a succession crisis, which followed the death of Henry I in 1135, so going quite far back. But to make more sense of it, we need to go even further back. So 15 years previous to that, onto the Normandy coast, is still very much part of the English kingdom, obviously, because William the Conqueror came across.
He keeps his old bit.
Definitely. So ever since then, his sons have basically ruled England and Normandy together. So Henry I and his court are at the port of Barfleur, preparing to make a return crossing to Southampton. And it's worth pointing out that Henry I was a bit of a lad, shall we say?
A bit of a lad.
he deserves his own podcast in his own right, honestly. But he had no fewer than 20 illegitimate children.
Wow.
20?
20. There's rumours of 22. There's probably a whole lot more out there. But he recognised 20 illegitimate children.
That's unbelievable. I mean, even, you know, I mean, the obvious aside, he's incredibly fertile.
Yeah.
Keep that in mind.
Right, okay. And when you say recognised, as in just said they existed, made official.
Oh, no, he gave them lands, titles.
Oh, wow.
They are all really well looked after.
So he's kind of a good dad.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, aside from being a very ruthless king, he was a brilliant father.
A lovely dad.
Brilliant father. So, I mean, honestly, yeah, they come into it a bit later on as well. But mm-hmm. he has 20, or maybe 22, illegitimate children. Only two legitimate children.
Right.
With his late wife. No, she's, by this time, this is 1120, she's already passed away 2 years previously. So he has a daughter, Matilda. Mm-hmm. Who we've already heard from.
I have heard that name.
You'll hear Matilda an awful lot more in this podcast. It's a very popular name in the royal courts. And then her little brother is William, known as Atheling, which is a Saxon title for prince.
Yes, yeah.
Which you may have come across. So those are the only two. So obviously William is the natural heir.
Yeah.
Is William older?
No, William's younger.
So it is. Ah. It's done by the male line.
Oh yes. Right. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Yeah, so it's the male form of primogeniture.
Sure.
So okay. Where it's just the boy tops.
I mean, that's
boy trumps girl.
That's mostly the rule this part of history. Like, there's not really any places that would do it differently.
No, they kind of come again. We're kind of coming to that a little bit later as well. There are a couple of examples. But people don't generally like that, and they want to marry off those girls pretty quickly. So there is a man in charge.
Right.
Because who knows what chaos can ensue when a woman takes over.
God, exactly. Am I right?
Yeah.
So Henry had succeeded to the throne of England in 1100, despite being the youngest son of William the Conqueror. So William Rufus, who succeeded his father, he's already died.
Right.
And then there was a massive scramble. Henry just literally ran in there and picked up the crown and went, right, I'm going to be king.
God, so it's already a chaotic kind of field of play.
Yeah, there's an older brother out there who was estranged from William. And just to make sure, Henry has him imprisoned.
Right, okay. Well, so, you've got it. You've got to do that.
Yeah, so he's out of the game entirely. He has got a son who's known as William Clito. So he is the only chap out there who is the threat to Henry's son, William's throne at this point in time.
Right.
Henry was really proud of being the only son of William the Conqueror to be born what's known as in the purple. So when William became king.
Ah, I see.
Then Henry was born about 2 years after, so about 1068. And so he was the only one of the sons to be born when his father was king.
He's kind of like born English, sort of. He's native born as opposed to the
first royal. Because his brothers are duke's sons.
Mm.
Yeah.
So it's just lower in the category. Now that he's a king's son, his older brothers are like just still dukes and he's already
right.
a prince
by birth.
Yeah.
So yeah. Anyway.
So that's kind of where they're all at this point in time. You know, boy trumps girl. And if you've been born while your father's a king, then you've even got even more right.
Right,
so
right.
So that's kind of where they're at.
They're all old news. They're boring. They're
exactly,
the past. They're just Normans, whereas he's English.
He's actually, the King of England.
Yeah.
And and that's where he should be. That's what he thinks. So Normandy's still very much part of England's realm, but you've also got the rest of France, who is not France as we know it today. So you've got the very independent regions of Maine, Boulogne, Anjou, Flanders, Aquitaine, they're all vying for power. They're all looking to get hold of Normandy as well, because then you're controlling the coast.
Right.
So
is it sort of more like England not that many years ago, when it was all different kingdoms? It hadn't really been united.
They were an idea
of France and being French, but not one united kingdom.
Yeah, yeah. So you had like the King of France, but he had a very tiny little region and sort of sat there going, you know, you will answer to me, you will. And they're all going, maybe, you know, make it worth our while.
Yeah. You will answer me. I won't give you any orders, because then it really highlights that you don't answer to me, but I am officially in charge.
But I mean, it's exactly why Normandy was set up, was because the French king had no way of controlling this load of Norsemen who'd come down. Mm. And so went, okay, fine. I'll give you this whole load of land by the coast. Just swear fealty to me. And that's what the Dukes of Normandy were.
Yes.
And so it's just a complete chaos. Whereas actually England had been quite well centralised by this point.
Mm, it calmed down.
Yeah.
Ish.
Ish, yeah. Especially the north is a bit more tricky. But anyway.
That was William again.
Yeah.
So because of all these rival regions, and because everything's a little bit insecure, he wants to marry off his two legitimate children. Don't get me wrong, the illegitimate children have made very good marriages.
Yeah.
But the legitimate ones, he needs to make that a real power statement.
Mm-hmm.
So Matilda is 8 years old when she is betrothed to the Holy Roman Emperor, Henry V.
Right.
And she's carted off to Germany.
Oh, lovely. How old's the Holy Roman Emperor at this point?
He's a bit older than her, just a bit. But obviously, canonically, she cannot be married until the church recognises her as a woman. So while she's crowned Queen of the Germans, she doesn't actually sort of marry Henry until a few years later, until she's...
And I'm sure they wait a very normal amount of time until she's considered a woman, right? It's 18 or something.
No, 14.
Oh, God.
14, yeah.
14. I mean, it's better than 8, I guess.
Yeah, so 13, 14, the church would recognise a child as a woman, basically. A boy's is about the same. So,
right, okay.
Yes.
Lovely.
Yeah, really lovely. But it's all, you know, it's absolutely fine. She's, you know, she's crowned Queen of the Germans. She then becomes Empress alongside her husband, so who's the Holy Roman Emperor.
Of course,
When she's 16, she becomes regent of Italy in his absence at one point, when he goes off to sort some other trouble out.
God, she just gets Italy.
Yeah, that's so lovely. She's sorting that out. So, you know, she's got a really powerful marriage. Mm-hmm. And then Henry looks at, obviously, his son, his heir, the apple of his eye, and he marries him to the heir of Anjou.
Right, okay.
So this is another Matilda. I'm sorry, there's going to be lots of Matildas. So Matilda of Anjou at the time of 1120, when they're all stood on the coast of Barfleur, she is 9 years old.
So
not married yet, betrothed, but yes.
Long engagements.
It's confusing to have two Matildas and then now sisters-in-law, both similar ages. Like,
there's more to come.
Because William and Matilda's mum was known as Edith when she was born, but she then changed her name to Matilda.
Christ. Okay. So there's lots of Matilda. Is Matilda just a super popular? It's just a really great name.
Yes, it is.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
So our Matilda, our main Matilda, she is currently at this point in 1120 still in the Holy Roman Empire in Germany with her husband.
Right.
On the coast, you have got Henry I, you've got his son William Adeline, you have got a load of illegitimate children. They've been having a whale of a time.
Around,
just hanging around. And they're ready to go across to Southampton.
Okay.
So it's much later in the autumn than they would normally be crossing. Normally the last sort of month they'd be doing it would be September. They are crossing in November.
Right. Autumn storms.
So exactly. Quite cold as well.
Ugh, unpleasant time.
Now, for whatever reason, they're travelling in two ships. I get it. Normally that's a good idea. But this captain actually approaches King Henry and says, oh, it'd be really great if you could use my ship. She's kitted out for royalty. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. Your patronage would do me no end of good. And Henry goes, well, actually, I do just prefer my long ship. So
okay.
Tell you what, my son would love to have some time on your ship. And so...
Sounds like a great idea.
Yeah, so
he wants to get away from his son as well. So, oh, for God's sake, he's like so loud at the moment. All his mates. You go in that one. I'm going to have a nice kip in
exactly.
It's like having the kids' ship. It's like the kids' table. Like it's just sending them on their own little
pretty
party
much.
Cruise. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So William and all his buddies and all his half siblings, they go on to what's known as the White Ship.
Okay.
And Henry and little Matilda, they go on to another long ship, and obviously the rest of the court go with them. Now they leave on time.
Okay.
William's crew are just having a great party.
It's on the lash, aren't they?
They are on the lash.
Right.
That was actually something that was picked up after the incident, shall we say. There was a lot of drinking going on.
Nice.
Now, another character I wanted to introduce you to is Barold the Butcher.
Barold the Butcher.
Mm-hmm, from Rouen.
Okay.
He goes onto the White Ship basically chasing debts.
Right.
So he's a little bit out of place, and he's sort of going across the deck trying to get everyone's money out of
him. Is he like a criminal, like a mafia don or something? He's called the Butcher.
He's an actual butcher.
He's a butcher.
He's just a butcher.
Oh, right.
Yeah. He's just your everyday butcher from Rouen.
And they just bought a lot of meat and didn't pay for it?
Pretty much. Okay. He's just chasing them for debts.
What a wild bunch of lads.
So with Barold on board and all the oarsmen, all the party and all the crew, it's about 300 people on the ship. So that's how big it was.
Wow.
And they set out just after midnight, or just before midnight, as the sort of accounts vary. And in little under 2 miles out into sea, they hit a gigantic rock.
Why did they go at midnight? It just seems, boating 101. I don't know, it seems really dodgy.
Yeah, there's a lot of stories about them going, we'll give them a head start and we'll overtake them because the ship is just so sick. It's amazing.
Oh, it's just that good of a ship.
Yeah, that's what they're all doing. Unsinkable, yes. Are you kind of getting the parallels
here
already?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, it hits this rock. It completely breaks apart. So you've got people falling into the very icy channel at this point. Obviously not particularly dressed very warmly because they're royals, and royals don't dress particularly warmly. There's, got fine fabrics and what have you. Barold, on the other hand, is dressed like a farmer. So he's got a nice woolen sort of jerkin on. So he's quite happy. So the guards who are with William Atheling, they get him onto the only rowing boat on this ship and they get out of there. So he's safe. He's fine. That's absolutely fantastic.
Okay.
It's complete chaos behind on this rock. It's just the whole thing's breaking up. People are in the water. They're sort of they're dragging each other down, trying to get out of the water.
And you say they're 2 miles offshore,
yeah.
So they're not getting rescued.
No,
really.
They're not. No,
and they can't swim that far either. If
they can't send any signals or anything. It's also midnight. I mean, 2 miles out. Like if it was daytime, someone could maybe see the ship. I don't know how far you can really see out to sea, but at midnight, you're not seeing anything.
No.
So they're hearing a lot of screaming.
Yeah.
And the screaming actually brings William back because his half-sister, his half-sister Matilda of Pesh, Countess of Pesh, she's screaming. He's like, we've got to go back and save her. But the problem is everyone's panicking so much, they swamp the rowing boat and he dies.
So the heir to the newly minted English crown has just gone down with how many of his half-siblings?
So I don't actually know.
Like the majority of
them? No, it was quite a few. It was probably about half a dozen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Still plenty left.
And there's a lot left, yeah. But there's a lot.
Some of the dukes on board as well of England.
There were some big names. There were bishops and everything.
A big hit.
Yeah, it was a huge hit. To the nobility, to the royal family. The only survivor, Beryl the Butcher.
Beryl the Butcher, which is sus, I'd say. He goes on collecting debts and then he's the only survivor.
Yeah. He's picked up the next morning. Sorry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I just find it... I actually think it's quite poetic justice, actually, that all of the poshos get drowned, and the one guy who's just trying to earn a living...
They probably, trashed his store, back in France, and he's like, no, I've got to get some money back, I've got to recoup my losses, and then he survives.
Yeah.
I think all the jewels are probably goes washed home. Up. Yeah, exactly.
Guess what's wrong? You're not going to believe what happened to me last night. And his wife's like, oh, yeah.
And you just think he probably gets up to shore and then all these nice, bodies, but also jewels probably wash up the shore and he's like, well, I can make my money back here.
Yeah. Exactly.
There was a lot of looting.
Yeah.
One of the illegitimate children, Richard of Lincoln, they could only identify him by his fine clothes because he was in the water that long.
Bloated really bodies. Grim. Mm,
yeah.
I mean, this would be a huge deal back then. Would be the biggest story of the day. It is like the Titanic, isn't it? It's this huge thing where so many people died. Like, all of England would be awash with this story.
Yeah.
Bigger than Titanic, though, because they have members of state. I mean, just their whole succession.
I mean, the heir.
Yeah, and also, in terms of King Henry, Henry's idea, he's not that young anymore.
No.
And his one actual heir who has a penis has just died.
Mm.
So what do you do? And you've sold your... Not sold. Oh, whoops. Sold the other one off to the Holy Roman Emperor. So,
which you don't want to... You don't want him involved, I assume.
Well, so it's a real issue, for sure.
Yeah, so Beryl is the only one who's bringing news back when he's actually picked up by fishermen the next time. I know, bless him, old Beryl.
I like him.
I like him too, but it's just, it is weird.
He should be king. That's what it should happen.
Yes, that should be the outcome.
That would have been great. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it could have ended up that way because Henry was so, so inconsolable about this and so worried about what was going to happen. He didn't get out of bed for days. And then eventually his nobles had to sort of go in and really force him to rile himself and say, you need to remarry, you need to get a male heir.
Mm.
So he is about 53 at this point, and he marries the very lovely Adeliza of Louvain.
Oh, good, not another Matilda.
Adeliza. She's 18.
Okay.
So, you know...
It's 55, 18. Yeah. It's not great.
It's Donald Trump territory.
It is.
At least she's not 9.
Yes, yes.
Always
am. Yeah.
So, yes, they obviously then start trying very hard to create another male heir in time, basically. Because obviously 55, 53,
He's fertile, but...
We know he's fertile.
We know he's fertile, but 55, it's...
But also, she might not be.
That's true.
You don't know. It's always a gamble.
Yeah, and there's no issue for the next few years, which is always a bit of a worry.
Right.
And in the meantime, our Matilda... I'm going to keep calling her Armatilda.
Armatilda,
her first husband dies in 1125, and they have no heirs either. She's not produced any issue. So his crown then goes on to somebody else.
So she's kind of lost a bit. She's no longer connected.
Empress without an empire.
Yeah. So she retains the title of Empress right up until she dies, but she gives up all of her titles, her lands, everything, and she comes back towards Normandy to be with her father.
So it's a bit like Queen Mother or something. You remain queen even if you are no longer the actual queen.
She's that, yeah. Like she's the dowager empress.
Yeah, yeah. She remains empress, but they don't want her anywhere near
them
now.
Can't be uncrowned. So she's already become an empress. Mm. So she can't be unempressed.
Yeah, yeah. And that doesn't really happen, with guys, because if they're still there, they're still king.
Mm.
Yeah.
You have to die to have lost your title, whereas they can lose it through their spouse dying.
Yeah.
So, 1127... there's been still no issue from Adeliza or Henry. So New Year's Day, Henry gathers a load of barons, a load of bishops, and says, right, I want Matilda to be my heir.
Oh, this is very House of the Dragon.
It is, first scene.
And so he's obviously, he likes his daughter. Like, he's not like, no, I don't want anything to do with her, I want a male heir. He is slightly progressive in a way. I mean, he did want a son, but is now realising he's not getting one. It's nice that he's not reacted so badly to his wife. I think he's not get me another... He's not Henry VIII thing it and just saying, get me another wife.
Yeah, exactly. But I mean, at the same time, people die young in this time period. So again, it's very teetering on the edge here. Because how old's Matilda? 18?
Oh, no, she's in her 20s by now.
Okay, yeah. So, you know, if people are dying at 50, she's middle-aged. Pretty much. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, also the whole fertility thing. Mm. They sort of look at women and go, well, you know, she's out of her teens now.
Yeah. Yeah, she's... old maid. By... divorcee. Actually, yeah. A widow.
Yeah, widow at 20. Jeez.
And she obviously hadn't had any issue with Henry. So, of course, there was no, her Henry V. So there was absolutely no guarantee either that she would have an heir.
Well, they're really struggling. They've got no one that's viable.
But I think he's just trying, Henry I is just trying to think about continuity for the sake of England. You know, it's had so much uproar with everything going on between William the Conqueror and everyone and Harold Godwinson and everyone else.
He doesn't want it splitting off to someone random or a bunch of wars. He wants to pick someone.
Exactly,
And it sounds like that doesn't really work. He tries to pick someone that no one's going to argue about. And I sense the reason we're having this episode is that people did argue about it.
Yes. Yeah. Spoiler alert. Yeah. They weren't happy.
Yeah.
But what they do is with the oath, they swear them one by one. Mm. And they swear fealty to Matilda. So it's done. Your oath is done in front of everybody else. Everybody else is witness to your oath.
So he's trying to lock people in. Yeah. Like they cannot go back on their word.
Exactly.
You are fully into this. Exactly. If you do anything, you're screwed.
Yeah. It's quite touching that he's doing that for her. I know he's doing it for the legacy of his line, but still to do that and sort of try his best to sort of reach beyond his own death to secure the crown for Matilda. I think that's quite a nice sentiment, sort of.
So in hope of getting a male heir potentially out of Matilda, he then remarries her.
Okay.
To Geoffrey, known as Plantagenet.
Oh.
Of Anjou.
Okay.
So we're maintaining that link because, of course, William's passed away. Yes. Little Matilda's lost her husband. So the link with Anjou is gone and there's a threat from other people coming in. So come forward, Geoffrey.
It's about shoring up her base as well now that she's going to be the heir. Right.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So he is 15 years old.
Okay.
She is 26 years old.
That's not as bad.
No.
There's been worse combos.
No.
Yeah.
But they don't like each other very much. No.
He's a 15-year-old. Who likes a 15-year-old kid? Like, 15-year-old boys are the worst.
So. They really are.
Yeah. This is it.
And who's also just now set to become king consort, essentially. Like, he's going to be a massive twat.
Again, still there's no issue from either end. Right. So either marriage, and in 1131, the oath of fealty to Matilda is re-sworn. So Henry's really trying to hammer at home that this is what's going to happen. This is what's likely to happen. I mean, they do manage to get along long enough, Matilda and Geoffrey, to have a son.
Okay.
Amazing. So we've got the boy.
So they get something, they get an heir.
Yeah, so that's 1133. They have Henry.
Classic.
Classic. We'll go back to the father. And then Geoffrey Jr. in 1134. We've got an heir. We've got a spare.
Perfect.
But obviously it's a generation below where Henry I would ideally have liked it.
Right. Yeah, these are his grandsons.
Yeah, but yeah, that's still pretty secure. And I think the idea of having a female, like to people who are deeply sexist, I'm sure the idea of having a queen, but she has a male heir, makes it easier to swallow. Like they're like, well, maybe once he comes of age, she'll probably take a back seat. He will essentially become the de facto king. Like he's more of the inheritor. She's like a regent that will be the in-between.
And that's really important because at this point, you think people who have already sworn their loyalty to Matilda, now we've got these boys on the scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, has that changed their perception of that oath? Which becomes important later on.
Okay. Henry's still around at this point. He's still kicking.
He is, but not for much longer.
Oh, well, how old is he now then?
He's in his 50s. He's in his mid-50s by now.
Okay,
If not, sort of pushing towards 60. And this is a very famous... I don't know if you've ever come across this phrase of perishing by a surfeit of lampreys.
I haven't. But a way to go.
It's the only time you hear this phrase. I've literally never heard it before or since. No. But whenever anyone talks about the death of Henry I, they say he died of a surfeit of lampreys.
Wow.
And that's it. That's that. So what are lampreys?
Lampreys, I think they're all pretty much almost extinct now, but they're kind of eel.
They're awful, aren't they?
They're grim.
They're terrifying.
They are so grim.
They're like long worms with teeth.
Yes.
That's horrible. Yeah. But I guess really tasty?
They were really prized for their meaty flesh, particularly within sort of royal circles.
Right,
And there seems to have been an incident in the past where Henry's physicians told him not to have any more.
Calm it down, man. You're having too many. Just every meal.
And it's
a few more vegetables. Come on, you've got to do this.
Because apparently they can be quite toxic. So, you know, eat enough of them and you've got enough of them in your system, then,
So you can imagine they're not being cooked like... No one's thinking about
food
poisoning and so on. And so he literally dies by eating too many.
Yeah.
Oh.
I just imagine him having one like hanging out of his mouth.
Yeah, is it like the poison like kills him later, or is he mid meal and like he's choked? Is he just really?
Oh, no, it takes him time. It takes him time to die. About a week.
Of lampreys. It's horrible. Lampreys, I
know. But that's unfortunately what he's known for as well. That's the most terrible thing, you know. Yeah. And he did some terrible things in his life. He did some good things, but some very terrible things in his life. But it's just the comical thing that he's remembered for. So.
Right, okay.
But yeah.
So yeah, now what do you do, right? Yeah. You've suddenly got a dead king.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Double sworn oaths to the daughter, the Empress Matilda.
I mean, that feels fairly set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, everyone's sworn to this Empress. She's got heirs. The king wanted her. Surely nothing could happen.
So yeah, what could happen?
what could possibly go wrong?
Well, Matilda is currently, she's in the very early stages of her third pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
Now, her second pregnancy nearly killed her. So she is putting her feet up. She is not taking any chances.
Okay.
She actually is so far away when Henry passes away that she doesn't hear the news within about a week, maybe 10 days. Okay. It's sort of been sort of calculated when no one's quite sure where she is. And they sort of calculated how quickly a horseman could get there if he didn't sort of just kept changing horses. Somebody who does hear and someone who does act very quickly is the wonderful Stephen of Blois.
Stephen of Blois. I remember that name from the beginning of this episode.
Yes, yeah.
I'm sure he's a great guy.
Stella.
Again, Stephen. It's weird. It doesn't fit. It does Steve. No. Like, it's just odd.
Steve of Blois.
Yeah, so it would be...
Call me Steve.
What's the French version?
Etienne.
Oh. Mm,
yeah.
Okay, so not I was just going to use a French accent, but yeah. Okay, so what does he do?
So he hot-tails it over to Dover.
Basically. Okay, and what's his relation?
So he's actually Matilda's first cousin.
Right, okay.
So his mother, Adela, was Henry I's younger sister.
Right, okay.
So he is also a grandchild of William the Conqueror.
Yes.
He's also one of the chaps who swore an oath of loyalty to Matilda.
No way.
Yeah. He was a favourite of Henry's court. He actually was meant to be on the White Ship. And he got off the White Ship. I mean, conspiracy theories abound, don't they?
He got off the White Ship.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because at that point, the heir was in his way. Mm-hmm. Like, William was in his way. That's like, oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot.
100% agree. Yeah. Conspiracy theory, yeah.
And it's good to sort of keep in mind as well, would he do what he now does if William was still around? And that's a really interesting point to consider.
Yes.
So he drunk too much on the White Ship, so he took himself off to be ill and recover.
Wow.
Bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah, the rest of them were drunk on the ship, so, like, yeah. Is he high up in... Are there other people between him in the line of succession? Or if Matilda had died for whatever reason, heirs, would he probably be one of the next?
No, I think Adela was the younger sibling.
Oh, so there's other cousins.
There are other cousins around, but if you're going straight from Henry...
Mm.
Yeah, because you've still got William... No, has William Cleto passed away by this point? It was 1120? Yeah, William Cleto's gone, actually.
Right.
So he was the biggest threat, because he was the eldest son of the eldest son of William the Conqueror.
Right, okay, yeah.
But he is now dead. So actually, the way's pretty clear.
So that he is kind of almost direct. So yeah. he could be, in theory, the first male... I guess ignoring the grandchildren that are now there. Like, if they just decided, no, we don't have any women in the line of succession, it could go to him.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. And there's a lot of other parallels like that in history, like Richard III and his nephews and everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, what would have happened to the grandsons as well? That's another...
God, the royals are awful, aren't they? It's just gross.
So many rabbit holes we could go down.
Yeah,
so true.
So, but this is the point. So, because he is so close to that succession, people don't necessarily... sort of blink when he comes over and goes, yeah, I think actually I'll be king. Thanks.
He's kind of a natural fit. He's a dude.
Yeah.
And also he's kind of copying his uncle, the former king, Henry I, just hightailed it as quickly as possible, got crowned, went to Winchester, held the treasury and took away the older brother's legitimacy. Because that was just it wasn't the done thing, but it's happened before. Mm-hmm. Stephen's just doing the same thing.
So Stephen's in London, he then heads to Winchester, which of course is another administrative seat of power, and where the treasury...
Winchester.
We love Winchester.
He's from Winchester.
Ah.
From Winchester, yeah.
It's a cool place.
It's a very cool place.
So the oath to Matilda, funnily enough, is briefly called into question. But a lot of people who were supporting Stephen already claim that they did it under duress.
Which is probably true. Like, they, I assume they couldn't really say no at the time. With the king
they
being
would
there.
Have, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They would have lost a lot of things, if not the heads, but, you know.
Yeah.
So no one was really too bothered about it anyway. And they sort of...
It's like, we all agree that didn't count.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Collective responsibility, basically.
We're all there. He all forced us. He all strong-armed us into...
And he's not here now.
Exactly.
So.
And where is Matilda? Well, she's over there. Yeah. Of course, the other thing is, Matilda's been away for so long. Like, she was in Germany, like, growing up in Germany.
Yes.
She's actually not been in England very much in her adult life. So she's not that well known.
Yeah.
And she could also be arguably considered a foreigner, being married to a foreigner for so long. So everyone's quite happy at this point. No one's really batting an eyelid. He is crowned in December.
Easy.
God's anointed now.
Yeah.
Wow. That could be the end of the episode. That could have been everything.
It could absolutely been everything. I mean, a few weeks later, he is pallbearer for Henry I when he finally makes it back. He's gone he's gone so fast ahead of him.
Wow.
Yeah, he's weeks ahead. He's already crowned, anointed with holy oil, and then he can act as a pallbearer for Henry I.
It's very suspicious how quickly he's acted.
Yeah.
He may have been in control of whoever delivered the lampreys to the king. He may have killed the heir. So,
yeah, at this point, he must be feeling pretty secure. I mean, he's not going to worry too much about, I hate to say it, but a woman who could actually, she hasn't got the support of any lords at this point. Mm-hmm. She's pregnant and she might even die in the pregnancy. That happens so often.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, she's pregnant. She's probably going to die. If she doesn't die, I'll deal with that later.
Yes.
Yeah. And what possible threat could she really realistically pose to him, to an anointed king? Exactly.
Yeah.
And she's across the channel.
Exactly.
So how are you sort of feeling now he's crowned? Are you feeling injustice for Matilda? Or are you thinking that Stephen's just, it was a bit of a risk. It was a bit of a bold move, but fair play.
I mean, I guess fair play, but no, it's awful. Like, let her be queen. Like, fuck off. Like, you swore allegiance. I know it's kind of under duress, but like, stop being a prick.
But to pose the devil's advocate on this...
Oh, God, do you always do this?
Well, it's important, though. That, like, Henry I did exactly what Stephen did. So if... not the rules of today, I'm not saying that. And again, I'm just posing the question here. Stephen hasn't actually murdered anyone that we know of.
Well...
William Appling, maybe. He's...
I mean, he probably has
299
murdered.
Other people.
Yeah.
He probably has murdered people... At some point, just random people. Like, I'm sure he's done something. They're all raw. They're all bad.
But he is a grandson of William the Conqueror.
Yeah.
He's not done anything to... It's not like Richard III, possibly, where it's been a bit more malevolent, depending on who you believe and all that.
Yeah, yeah.
So he hasn't necessarily, by the standards of the day, done anything scandalous.
Mm. And I suppose, in theory, he could have made the argument, well, Matilda was away giving birth, like you say... She could die. Mm-hmm. She's also not there.
Mm-hmm.
England needs a king
or
needs someone to rule them. She's away. He could be saying, well, she's shirking her duties by having a baby. What an awful thing. I will take over. Like, surely she's not doing her job. I mean, still a bit of a dick move, but...
Hey there, listener. Hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. This episode was actually too epic to fit inside a single episode, so we've split it into two parts for your listening pleasure. Part 2 will be released a day after part 1, so see you then.